To start out our program here today, Lansing area leaders in health, government, and transportation are taking what they call comprehensive steps to prepare for Ebola. Yesterday, officials representing the Ingham County Health Department, Sparrow and McLaren Health Systems, the City of Lansing, and others briefed the media on what contingency plans they've been making. To learn more, we welcome one of the key planners and a participant at yesterday's briefing. Linda Vail serves as health officer of the Ingham County Health Department. Welcome to Current State.
Thank you.
In a press release announcing yesterday's gathering, the City of Lansing referred to comprehensive steps being taken to, and I'll quote here, ensure that Lansing area residents are well protected against any possible exposure to the Ebola virus, unquote. What are the key comprehensive steps that you've taken so far?
Well, I mean, comprehensive steps really involve a lot of things. The partnership and collaboration that is required amongst hospital partners, public health partners, EMS, public safety, in terms of just being on the same page and understanding what the situation is. So a big part of it is having those relationships, having that communication, and working together in the event of any emerging issue. Then specifically related to Ebola, there's a lot of information coming out fairly frequently from the CDC, and we ensure that our partners have the latest guidelines. We're communicating with them regularly. We're making sure that we're, you know, following the appropriate checklist to identify a case, and then should there have been or would be one, and then just making sure that the hospitals and all other partners have appropriate protective equipment and know how to use that equipment. So And then what steps would we actually take in a community if we were to have a case around the whole issue of identifying who else might be exposed and how we handle that. So comprehensively, we're dealing with all of those issues and have worked together on all of those issues.
But I take it this is a process that has begun. How far into the process are you, and how much further is there left of this process?
Well, you know, honestly, it's a process that began many years ago. You know, we look at infectious diseases and emergency infectious diseases as, you know, kind of a grouping of things that have different routes of transmission. So this particular virus has a particular threat, a particular route of transmission, and we work for years to protect and make sure that we're on board with all that stuff. Then we just add on the more current information about Ebola, so it's not like it's brand new preparedness. It's work that we've been doing for years together, and then we just add in the information about the current situation and make sure we're communicating and doing things effectively. So, you know, how much longer? As long as the situation evolves and the CDC issues additional guidelines that say, okay, now we're recommending, you know, that high-risk hospital, you know, hospital caretakers who would be in a high-risk situation possibly use this kind of personal protective equipment rather than this, and making sure that we have those things available and that we're all aware of what's going on.
And the CDC did issue a couple more recommendations yesterday, which we'll get to in just a second. Current State attended yesterday's briefing, and I want to play a clip for our listeners from that. We spoke with Linda Peterson, Chief Medical Officer of McLaren Health System. Here's how she described what's happening. I'd just like you to add to her comments however you want. Here's Linda Peterson of McLaren.
We both have implemented an Ebola task force that has been meeting for the past several months, and we have been educating our health staff and especially our frontline teams on how to be ready for if a patient arrives in the emergency room. So we have a specific policy and procedures and protocols that have been put into place, and we've identified an area in the hospital where that patient would be isolated and a team that would specifically deal with that patient if they were to present to the hospital.
Anything you'd care to add to what she said?
No, that's perfectly, that's completely appropriate in our healthcare system. Sparrow is doing the same thing. They have identified teams. They've been doing lots of trainings. They've had their task forces together. You know, in terms of checklists and guidelines, they're following the CDC guidelines, which is completely appropriate. You know, we shouldn't stray from what the CDC is pushing out, you know, nationally. And then, you know, identifying where in their hospitals they would have an individual. So that's all very, very good work and very appropriate.
But let me repeat just how much more of this process do you feel remains? How far into this are we, and how much is left to go? Do you have a feel for that?
If I understand your question, in terms of preparedness, you know, we're towards the end of the race here.
Okay.
You know, again, I think the evolving situation would cause us to tweak where we are slightly. Now, you know, again, a case happens or something like that, and that's a different situation with, you know, where we are versus where we're going. But preparedness-wise, we're near the end of the race here.
Linda Vail is health officer of the Ingham County Health Department. We're talking about preparations that have been made for Ebola here in the Lansing area, and to prevent Ebola in the Lansing area. Late last week, as I'm sure you know, the Michigan Nurses Association raised serious doubts about the state's preparedness after comments by Governor Snyder. The Nurses Association President John Armelagos referred to training and drilling at facilities that needs to happen, which implied that it's not happening. Was he mistaken as far as Lansing goes? Is drilling and training, relevant drilling and training happening at Lansing hospitals?
Yes, relevant drilling and training is happening at Lansing hospitals. Relevant drilling and training is happening at the health department. Relevant drilling and training is happening in our public safety fire EMS organizations as well.
I know isolation is a key part of this planning. And a few minutes ago, Linda Peterson said isolation areas at both hospitals had been, I believe her word was, identified. Are they just identified, or are they equipped as well with everything that they need?
They are both identified
and
equipped.
Okay.
Absolutely.
How many patients are they prepared to take at each hospital? Is that known?
I believe it is known, and I think that I've heard those numbers, but my brain has been going like wild with all kinds of numbers and facts and figures, and I'm not sure I remember exactly what number. I think I heard one of the hospitals say 40. Possibly, but I really don't know their numbers
of
rooms.
That kind of anticipates my next question, though, because I'm really curious, what kind of scale do you have in mind when you're making these preparations? Are you thinking in terms of a smaller outbreak, cases you could count on your hands, let's say, or do you explicitly plan for something a lot larger?
Well, let's look at what's happened in Dallas in the last month. You know, you have one individual that came into this country from Africa. You now have two healthcare workers who have become ill and have been hospitalized and have been isolated and are doing well. In that same period of time, the 21 days has elapsed where the individuals that were living close to the original case were quarantined, including his fiance and other close friends. They have all been cleared. So in that situation where we had a sick individual, it's not like we've had to have a hospital capacity of a large amount. Now, the other thing that you will add to that is that our local hospitals will only have a case for a couple of days because the CDC has a plan to take those individuals and send them to hospitals that are being specifically prepared. So we would have an individual, should that happen, which, again, is extremely, extremely unlikely, we would have an individual for the first couple of days. As we've identified this as a probable Ebola case, then you go from probable to confirmed as a result of laboratory testing. That takes a couple of days. Once that happens, the CDC has a plan to take those patients to other hospitals in the country that have been identified.
I imagine it's understandable that the major health facilities are a particular focus of your planning. But what if a family doctor encounters a patient with Ebola? Have you gotten into that protocol?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, you know, the Ingham County Health Department is also the community health centers for Ingham County. So we run a network of primary health clinics ourselves. So, you know, we work with our staff in terms of the same CDC guideline questioning. You have a patient that has a fever, virus-like symptoms that can be flu-like symptoms. Now, what is the travel history of that patient? Because if there is not a travel history that says that there's a reasonable chance that there's been any exposure whatsoever to Ebola, it's not Ebola in this country right now. We don't have Ebola in this country right now. It's outside of the imported case and the two healthcare workers. So Yes, family care practices, and I was on the phone with MSU health team earlier this week, or actually it was late last week, talking about, you know, how they're prepared, what they would do, identify a patient, and then use an appropriate EMS ambulance provider to transport a patient then to the hospital. So that patient would end up at the hospital via a transport mechanism.
You referred several times here to the CDC and the guidelines that they issued some more yesterday, just refining refining protocols here. Just yesterday, the new guidelines, quote, provide an increased margin of safety, according to CDC Director Tom Frieden in a conference call with reporters. And there are three here all together. Equipment used should leave no skin exposed. They will make sure that healthcare workers dealing with Ebola patients are repeatedly trained, especially when it comes to learning how to put on and take off their personal protective equipment. I imagine just staying on top of the communication with state agencies and federal agencies is a huge part of the challenge here. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely challenging, but it is what we do. Every day in, day out, we have emerging issues. We dealt with SARS. We dealt with West Nile virus. You know, we've dealt with any number of issues that have these same, you know, things are going on. It's new to us. It's changing frequently. We're getting new information. And quite honestly, the situation evolves. And so some of the new information is really not related to we aired, you know, several days ago or a month ago, as much as it is we've learned new things and we use that information to do things even better. So it's very important to stay on top of what's going on. Quite honestly, I refer back to the World Health Organization and the CDC as being the solid and comprehensive guideline, and consistently recommend that we don't stray from those guidelines in terms of what we put out in our clinics, our own clinics, or what we advise with our hospital systems and other primary care clinics. So, yes.
Very good. Linda Vail is health officer at the Ingham County Health Department. We've been talking about yesterday's gathering and steps taken by leaders in health, government, and transportation to prepare for Ebola here in Mid-Michigan. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.